Picture a 15-year-old girl on a school bus, her head bent over notes for tomorrow's exam. A man climbs aboard, asks, "Who is Malala?" and fires 3 shots. One bullet enters beside her left eye, travels 18 inches down to her shoulder, and somehow, miraculously, doesn't kill her. This is how the world came to know Malala Yousafzai. But her story didn't begin with violence. It began in a paradise called Swat Valley, where her father dared to believe that daughters deserved their names written on family trees, and where a little girl grew up thinking books were more thrilling than any adventure. What transforms this from a story of survival into something transcendent is what happened next. Instead of retreating into silence, she stood before the United Nations and declared that one child, one teacher, one book, one pen can change the world. Before that October day in 2012, she was already an activist, writing anonymous blogs about life under Taliban rule. After surviving what should have been certain death, she became the youngest Nobel Peace Prize laureate in history, proving that sometimes the voices someone tries desperately to silence become the ones the whole world stops to hear. Swat Valley earned its nickname Switzerland of the East, honestly. Snow-capped mountains, framed crystal rivers, tourists flocked to ski resorts, and ancient Buddhist ruins whispered stories of kingdoms past. Here, Malala's father Ziauddin ran the Kushal school and did something radical for a Pashtun man. He celebrated having a daughter. In their culture, sons were announced with gunfire while daughters were hidden away. But Ziauddin threw dried fruits and coins into her cradle, a tradition reserved for boys, and named her after Malalai of Maiwand, Afghanistan's greatest heroine who rallied troops against the British. Ziauddin's childhood stutter trapped syllables in his throat. For someone who loved poetry, this was torture. Yet at 13, he stunned everyone by entering a public speaking competition. "How can you?" his father laughed. The boy replied, "Don't worry, you write the speech and I will learn it." This determination defined him. Unlike his sisters who stayed home, he received education. His father chose modern schooling over madrasa, shaping his worldview and instilling core values: generosity, love of learning, commitment to equality. After college, where he advocated for Pashtun rights, he opened Kushal School to encourage independent thinking. When Malala was born, the school became her playground. Before she could talk, she toddled into classes as if teaching. By age 4, she sat in classes meant for older children, absorbing everything. She read voraciously, participated in speaking competitions, and developed strong political opinions. Through his example, Malala learned education wasn't about personal advancement, it was about transforming society. This philosophy would become her activism's foundation. The Taliban arrived like horror story characters, straggly-haired men in camouflage vests over traditional dress. Their leader, Maulana Fazlullah, a 28-year-old with a polio-crippled leg, established an illegal radio station called Mullah FM. His broadcasts began innocently, encouraging prayer and good habits, but soon grew extreme. 10-year-old Malala compared them to vampires from her Twilight books. These weren't the familiar Afghan Taliban, but homegrown Pakistani militants, Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan. Women were surprisingly drawn to Fazlullah. Malala's mother's friends praised his long hair and horse riding like the prophet. Within 6 months, people burned TVs, DVDs, and CDs in streets. The valley's transformation was swift and terrifying. Fazlullah's men patrolled streets like morality police, banned women from markets, closed beauty parlors, and prohibited polio vaccinations. After his brother died in an American drone strike, Fazlullah grew more aggressive. His followers killed local leaders and obliterated ancient Buddhist statues. When a threatening letter appeared on Kushal School's gate, calling it Western and infidel, Ziauddin changed boys' uniforms to traditional dress, but refused to grow a beard or close the school. Instead, he wrote a brave letter to the local newspaper, becoming one of the first to publicly oppose the Taliban. For Malala and her classmates, school became a sanctuary amid growing terror. They hid books in shawls, afraid to wear uniforms. The Taliban bombed schools almost daily. By late 2008, around 400 were destroyed. Then came the final blow. Fazlullah's deputy announced all girls' schools would close from January 15, 2009. When a BBC correspondent sought a female voice to chronicle life under Taliban rule, Malala volunteered, "Why not me? I want people to know what's happening." Under the pseudonym Gul Makai, Cornflower, her weekly entries appeared on BBC Urdu starting January 3, 2009. Her first post, "I Am Afraid," described nightmares of military helicopters and Taliban fighters. She wrote about choosing her favorite pink dress despite Taliban orders and how the burqa, fun for childhood dress-up, felt different when forced. As newspapers printed extracts, Malala discovered that the pen and words can be much more powerful than machine guns, tanks, or helicopters. By the Taliban's January 14th education deadline, only 10 girls remained in her once 27-student class. A New York Times documentary captured her final day before closure. "They cannot stop me," she told filmmakers through tears. "I will get my education if it's at home, school, or somewhere else." At 13, Malala became a powerful advocate. Archbishop Desmond Tutu nominated her for the Kids' Rights Peace Prize in October 2011. When she won Pakistan's first national peace prize, her mother worried, "I don't want awards, I want my daughter." Malala used the prize money to establish an education foundation for street children. In May 2009, Malala's family joined nearly 2 million people fleeing Swat as the Pakistani army launched Operation True Path against the Taliban. They became IDPs, internally displaced persons. "It sounded like a disease," Malala reflects. Her father said, "It is as though we are the Israelites leaving Egypt, but we have no Moses to guide us." After 3 months with relatives, they returned to a transformed valley, buildings in ruins, bullet-pocked walls, twisted metal everywhere. Her brothers found their pet chickens starved to death in an embrace. Just as life normalized, unprecedented rains began around her 13th birthday. With mountains stripped of trees, muddy floods destroyed everything. Throughout Pakistan, 2,000 drowned, 14 million were affected, 7,000 schools destroyed. Taliban presence increased, more schools bombed, her father's friend, Dr. Muhammad Farooq, killed. Punjab Governor Salman Taseer was assassinated for opposing blasphemy laws, his killer publicly celebrated. Amid these crises, Malala became convinced Pakistan needed real leaders. She continued speaking out. A Pakistani journalist revealed the Taliban had issued threats against Malala, saying she should be killed for spreading secularism. On October 9, 2012, Malala boarded her school bus after exams. A bearded man stopped the vehicle, and another demanded, "Who is Malala?" When girls looked at her, he raised a black pistol and fired 3 shots. The first bullet went through her left eye socket. 2 others hit her friends Shazia and Kanat. By the time they reached the hospital, blood soaked her hair and her friend Monaba's lap. Malala woke October 16th in Birmingham's Queen Elizabeth Hospital, disoriented with a breathing tube in her neck. Her head ached, her left ear bled, and the left side of her face wasn't working. She obsessed over hospital costs until Dr. Javed arranged a phone call with her father. Though she couldn't speak, hearing his voice brought an inner smile she couldn't physically express. When she asked for a mirror, she was distraught. Her long hair was shaved off, her face distorted. She had no idea her story had drawn 250 journalists worldwide. Most precious were 8,000 cards from children, some addressed to "The Girl Shot in the Head, Birmingham." When her parents finally arrived, she wept uncontrollably, shocked by how much older they looked. In March 2013, Malala's family relocated to Birmingham, living behind electric gates. Despite the spacious garden, they missed their community. She started school that April, appreciating modern teaching methods, though missing friends who knew her as just Malala. On her 16th birthday at the United Nations, wearing Benazir Bhutto's shawl, she delivered a powerful message. "Let us pick up our books and our pens. They are our most powerful weapons." One child, one teacher, one book, and one pen can change the world. Globally, 57 million children weren't in primary school, 32 million being girls. She reflects on her transformation. Today, I looked in the mirror and remembered once asking God for extra inches in height. Instead, He made me as tall as the sky. In a world where bullets silence voices and girls are told their only value lies in silence, one teenager proved that courage is the refusal to let fear write your story. Education isn't a privilege, it's a fundamental human right worth fighting for. Your voice matters. Your education matters. You matter.